The Tale of the Frozen Pussy, Slip or Trip, The $1 Million Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will hear on Miami Memoirs. Join Florida attorney Louis Ress as he recounts his 6 decades of legal practice in the wilds of South Florida. So, Louis, let's talk about divorces. That seems to be a popular area of litigation. What can you tell me of your experiences in that area?
Well, it's a popular area of litigation because people get married and religious laws have been relaxed and they get divorced. It used to be annulments, but it's simple to get a divorce. We have no-fault divorce. Some people get married and divorced many times, and it's prevalent, and the divorce rates have soared. It used to be very low, and now it's over 50%. Well, I'll tell you about divorces. There are 3 stories that I tell. I got into divorce work and then got out of it. I just wanted to try working in that field and see what it was like and have an experience. Mm-hmm. I was in the fortunate position of being able to work in different areas of the law and not do the same repetitive legal work on a daily basis and bore myself to death. So I was very, very excited to try doing some family law. And the first case I call Shades of Gray. The Grays, Tom and Anita, were splitting. They had lots of money. They had no kids, and the dog had died. It should have been a relatively simple case. Just divide their marital assets and work out an alimony agreement. No, not that easy. Angry divorcing couples need to vent their frustrations. They always seem to find an issue to wrangle over. Each wants to get the better of the other. Often it finds its way into the details of child custody. Who can pick up the child? Where can the wife live? Is it going to be joint custody or just visitation? Sometimes they fight bitterly over who gets the dog or the cat. The wealthier they are, the meaner some of these issues become, and an enormous number of lawyers' hours are spent on these vendettas.
Yeah, because money doesn't matter. It's who comes out on top.
Exactly. This is egos.
Yeah.
Mrs. Gray was independently well off. She was the heiress of the Fontana fortune, the Fontana beauty products. She was fairly flexible in negotiating the financial arrangements because she really didn't care that much. And we were only about $300,000 apart from a settlement. But she did want the oil painting of Randy, their deceased Boston Terrier. That was important to her. Tom said, "No way, that's my painting." Tom was the CEO and owner of Gray Tool Company, now located in Cleveland, Ohio, which started out with 2 employees, he and Anita. And he and Anita would wind up with 600 workers. Around and around they went. They wouldn't even agree to my suggestion of having the painting copied by a famous artist and then picking lots as to who would keep the original. I was getting annoyed with them, particularly Tom, who was acting in a selfish, spoiled way, like an arrogant boss, or like a spoiled child. All in one, he was just miserable. Vincenzo Vaselli, the senior partner of Vaselli, Eagleton, and Sofa, called me. Vaselli gets on the phone and says, "Res, I represent Gray Tool Company here in Cleveland, and I have been asked to take over representing Tom Gray in his divorce case. I suggest that you and Mrs. Gray come up here right now and meet with me and Mr. Gray in an effort to get this matter resolved." "Mr. Vaselli, I'm in the middle of a trial, and I would appreciate your scheduling the meeting in about 2 weeks. "Mr. Ress, I think you should come up right now. What about this Saturday? It should be over in 1 day. You'll be home on Saturday night, I promise. My client wanted it over now, and so I guess it would be okay for 3 days on a Saturday." Anita and I flew up late Friday night. She wore simple but expensively tailored suits with real silk blouses and a small gold and diamond brooch. She was a brunette, 5 feet 3 inches tall, trim, about 35 years of age, and very pretty. We checked into the Raleigh Hotel, the nice, old, elegant downtown social center, and I made it a point to have her room on the 10th floor and mine on the 2nd. Tom was not above using surveillance to embarrass his wife. We discussed our strategy. Our financial analysis included an adjustment for Anita having helped found the tool company. She wanted it over. The next morning at 9, we were in Mr. Vaselli's office. The conference room was huge. They had 20-foot-high ceilings, heavy everything, drapes with gold tassels, oak furniture, tapestries on the walls, and yes, believe it or not, a Degas ballet dancer statue. This statue was 3 feet high, and it was cast in bronze with a tutu. It was the real thing. I looked at it. It could have been in a museum. In walks Mr. Vasselli, making his appearance. And he looks just like the Don from Sicily. He's about 60 years old, white hair, 6'3" tall, 250 pounds, with a vest, a cravat, not a tie, a cravat, a pocket watch, and heavy cufflinks. Tom sits next to him. Anita and I sit across the big table. Mr. Vasselli wants to talk money, and he was willing to up the ante, $100,000. Mr. Gray wanted to talk about the painting and insisted that it be his and his alone. I told him that we would keep the painting and we wouldn't take less than the $300,000 already demanded. By 3 p.m, my suggestion of having the painting copied and then exchanging the original and the copy every 6 months was accepted. Mr. Vasselli announced that Tom wanted to have dinner with his wife tonight, and that if Tom's date was satisfactory, they would consider increasing their offer. Mr. Vasselli said that we should meet on Sunday after church at 10 in the morning. I was not happy, but Anita, who spoke in that soft, slow voice that is cultivated in the best families and at the finest schools, said that she preferred that the negotiations be completed. I knew with whom I was dealing and the power plays to accept, but I had a plan of my own. They could have closed today and resolved the money issue by paying $200,000 and saved $100,000, but they wanted to play me like a hooked fish. No way. I looked at my client and I said, Anita, I have a surprise for Mr. Vasselli and your husband, and if it's all right with you, I will just do it and you will be happy. We've already computed the value of your having worked at Great Tool, and I went on to explain what I intended to do. Mr. Ress, do whatever you wish, but I would like it resolved. At 10 after 10, Mr. Vasselli and Mr. Gray appeared. Mr. Vasselli speaks. Mr. Ress, my client had a nice visit with his wife last night, and we are prepared to offer to settle for $200,000. Mr. Vasselli, the price is now $400,000. My Saturday nights are very meaningful to me. Tom Gray had to be physically restrained by his attorney, who said, Tom, do not underestimate Mr. Ress. He obviously has some basis for this new demand. Thank you, Mr. Vasselli. Please take a look at these pleadings. And I take out a bunch of legal papers. We are very much aware that there is a merger being consummated, which was not disclosed to us, and that Great Tool is being acquired by Boise Cascade. This is a lawsuit which will be filed tomorrow, wherein Mrs. Gray will seek 50% of the stock of Great Tool, since she was a founder and she worked for Great Tool Company and was never compensated. You can see that the lawsuit is set here in Cuyahoga County and seeks to halt the Boise Cascade merger and to determine the ownership interest of Mrs. Gray. Vasselli turned white. He marched his client out of the room with his hand under Mr. Gray's arm. It didn't take 10 minutes for Mr. Vasselli to convince his client, and I was on a plane later that afternoon with a smiling Mrs. Gray. My fee of $300,000 was used towards buying our own office building. Anita, against my advice, invested her divorce money in a theatrical production, which lasted one night at the Dade County Auditorium. She still trades painting of Randy every 6 months. Next, I call this one Don't Blame Me. It's an interesting case. Chuck and Arnold were double brothers-in-law. Chuck was married to Arnold's sister, Alice. Arnold was married to Chuck's sister, Lois. They, all four of them, got along quite well, and the boys went into business together. And it's another beauty supply business, Fantasy Beauty Supplies. Fantasy was a small operation. It had 3 delivery trucks and 1 retail store with storage in the back. Chuck and Arnold each made deliveries to a number of beauty salons and came into contact with many glamour girls. It didn't take long for both of them to start having sex with their customers, sometimes in the back room of the store. One night, Alice noticed that Chuck had lipstick on his work shirt collar. She decided to follow him. The next day, she walked in on him just as a young blonde was putting on her dress and leaving the back room of the beauty supply store. That night, she summoned a family meeting, and she, Chuck, Lois, and Arnold sat down. She said, I asked you all here because I caught Chuck screwing a blonde, and it's over. Our marriage is over. Since we are all in business together, it's going to affect all of us. The business is going to be dissolved. Chuck, you bastard, you caused all of this. Chuck pointed his finger at Arnold. He said, why are you picking on me? Why are you blaming me? Arnold started all of this by screwing the redhead and half of the other customers. The girls wanted to know if I could combine the cases and save them some costs and fees. True story. The next one, this one's even better. And I was afraid to write this one out, and I still have some concerns about it. From Russia with Love. Charlie Osgood was a ski club buddy of mine. He actually lived in Philadelphia, but he kept an apartment and a 70-foot yacht here in Miami. Charlie became involved in helping a Russian family immigrate to the United States. He was able to get the parents and then their children into America. The younger child was a beautiful 20-year-old blue-eyed blonde with a knockout figure and a dazzling smile. Charlie, who was about 52 years old, flipped out over her. She had learned English and was deeply indebted to Charlie, as were her parents and her brother. She married him. Charlie owned real estate in Philadelphia, including an apartment complex. He also owned an ostrich farm. He entertained on his yacht, and Olga, who was studying at the University of Miami, would dance on the front deck with some of her girlfriends. The music would be loud and wild. Olga was finishing her last year at the U, and my wife and I didn't think that Charlie was in a stable marriage. However, he was happy, and he seemed satisfied with the relationship. It was about 2 weeks before Olga's graduation when Charlie called me in the office. He said, "Lewis, this is a personal call for advice, so don't bill me. I need your advice as a friend. Olga wants out. She wants $100,000. I don't want to give her one goddamn cent. I want to fight her all the way. What do I do?" I said, "Charlie, how long were you married?" He says, "3 years. How often did you have sex with Olga? 3 times a week? She's worth at least $300 a pop. That's the least a judge will award her. Then there are attorney's fees. She's got nothing, so you'll pay her lawyers, and it will be at least $100,000 before they are done with you. Then there are your lawyer's fees of at least $50,000. You're up to $150,000, and you haven't given her a dime. She'll get something, so just add what you think is reasonable on top. Also, you will have made an enemy of her. She'll hate you. If I were you, I'd call her in and tell her that you love her, and you will give her the $100,000, and then give her a $10,000 tip. I'm serious." I didn't hear from Charlie for about 6 months. When he did call me, he was extremely grateful. He said, "Lewis, you saved me." I called Olga in, and I told her that I was going to pay her the $100,000, and in addition, I was giving her a $10,000 tip. She started to cry with happiness and gratitude. She visits me once a week at least, and gives me blowjobs and wild sex, and I don't have to support her.
And you made your fee? Or that was just advice?
I just gave him some advice as a friend. He didn't want to pay the bill. A lot of people say that. As a matter of fact, divorces are a major source of litigation and attorney's fees. And it's a cesspool. Because the process of divorce starts with a lawsuit. In order to get the divorce, you have to file a lawsuit. And people are not generally capable of drawing and filing a lawsuit by themselves.
Sure.
It's called pro se. You can't do it. It's very hard. They have kits and everything. Do-it-yourself divorce, but it really doesn't work. And particularly if there are assets. So the minute now there's a divorce going on with assets, the wife seeks an attorney. That's what happens. Well, the lawyer starts to drool inside because this is big money. This is how they make big, big money. So the lawyers want to bill the fees. Well, the first thing they have to do is file affidavits of assets and needs. That's under the law. So the wife has to say what her needs are. Well, the lawyer brings in an accountant, but not a regular accountant. They're called forensic accountants, which means they go to court and go as far as they can to help the side that pays them. Sometimes you'll see in there the wife is claiming that she spends or needs $500 a week for cosmetics. It goes crazy. It goes out of control. Yeah. Psychiatric, psychological care, Zen, whatever they put in. And the husbands deny it and say they're broke and stop working and hide their income. There's a lot of money hidden outside the country in foreign bank accounts in foreign countries. And it's hard to
just discover. For that reason.
Yes, just for that reason. So now these accountants come in and they charge like $10,000 to guide you in preparing your statements. Then the lawyers get the clients worked up against each other and they tell them how poorly they've been treated and how the wife wants to step all over them. And the wife's lawyer says that the husband's trying to take advantage of her. And they start getting them to find areas of anger, of dispute. The more areas of dispute, the lawyers work the clients up, the more the fees are. Even afterwards, even after they settle cases, they'll come back and fight. Hiding assets is a big trick. In fact, you will find that there was a question on the tax return for a while. Do you have any money in any foreign bank account?
Right, right.
But the congressman quickly took that off because they had money hidden.
They themselves.
The sure. The fighting damages the kids. And the mothers very often have primary custody, and they turn the kids against the father. That's the prevalent thing to do. And the kids become alienated, and I've seen it time and time again. Then there's intimidation. The husband can intimidate or threaten the wife. There's perjury. That's very common. Both parties lie. They lie about everything. They make an agreement, and then they fail to comply with it, and then you got to go back into court to try to get the judge to force them to do it, and they find some reason why they don't wish to do it. It's a very nasty business. Then, of course, alimony. Alimony used to be permanent alimony for life. It used to be awarded if you were married over 10 years.
Wow.
No more. That was changed. The husband could be stuck with lifetime alimony. And now it's very rare. But alimony was deductible from an income tax point of view until December 31st, 2018, when under the new federal tax law, alimony was no longer deductible. Not only that, if you go back and modify settlement agreement that existed and was signed and enforced by order of court before December 31st, 2018. If you modify it, you may be reopening it and subject to having the alimony taxable.
Now.
Non-deductible. Wow. And non-deductible, to lose the deductibility.
Right.
So now the wife pays the tax on it, but since the 1st of January, she doesn't. The husband loses the deductibility, and a lot of people don't know that. So there were a lot of divorces going on where the husbands really were anxious to get the cases settled before the 31st of December 2018, yeah. And the wives wouldn't do it to get even with them.
Gosh.
Then you talk about attorney's fees. The judges award the fees. Generally, the attorneys that practice family law before the same set of judges, family court judges, all the time. And they are involved in their campaigns for re-election and for election. And when the judge awards a fee, he has only one vote to concern himself about, and that's the vote of the husband, generally, who gets stuck with the attorney's fee. And they can go wild. They have hearings on the attorney's fee. Well, you have to hire an attorney to come in to defend the attorney's fee, and then they bring in an expert on attorney's fees, and that's a trial within a trial on attorney's fees, which nobody thinks about, or few people think about when they get into this. So it's always good to get things resolved. Another thing is religion gets into it a lot, and a lot of particularly women get religious advisors, particularly evangelicals. And they want to control the education of the child, and they want the child to go to parochial schools, and they want the child to be raised in a specific way. And very often the husband doesn't belong to that particular denomination, and the result is the children are influenced against one spouse and for the other, because with the encouragement of religious advisors, which I find to be highly inappropriate. And then you have to get religious divorces. In the Jewish religion, it's called a get, G-H-E-T-T, I think. And the Catholic religion, you have to go for your divorce to Rome to get an annulment, usually, not a divorce. They don't recognize divorces in the Catholic Church. It's expensive, and you have to prove certain grounds, which are generally acceptable if you are sufficiently affluent. But that's a separate problem. And then I was thinking about how much perjury, this area of litigation involves. Perjury is something that nobody talks about and very little is done about unless you're into politics. And then it's a catch-all that they can get you with, although no one ever bothers with it otherwise.
Right.
I don't know how many. I would say the average judge will tell you that he or she hears maybe 10, 20 lies a day in sworn testimony in court. That's obvious to them are lies. But no one does anything. No one certifies it over to the prosecutors. They'd be up to their eyeballs in perjury cases. There was a case recently that I'm familiar with where the wife testified that she was holding items for her boyfriend. Divorce was over. But during the time that the divorce was going on, she had a boyfriend. And the boyfriend had a lot of very valuable items. And she said in the sworn testimony, "Those aren't mine. I'm just holding them for John, my friend." Then John tried to get the items back from her, and she said, "What are you talking about? Those are mine. You gave them to me." And this is all in sworn testimony, totally conflicting positions in sworn testimony.